Accession number 3771, Reel 3.
On Reel 3.
Yes, there was a ray of hope when Morrison, I think he was minister, and he issued a white paper according to which people should be released. The first one were dentists, then agricultural workers, then I think engineers or something, because there were quite a number of people who were even working for the British Army as translators on, and they were arrested by the police. I think there was quite some muddle in that, and people, the army protested and needed them, and that they were interned. And I think the last category were artists, of course, was to be expected. So, and that was artists who had made outstanding contributions to the arts. So that was rather a problem, how to prove that. We had a number of very good artists in the camp. I mentioned Charroux, who was a sculptor from Vienna, and Ehrlich, Paul Ehrlich, he was another Viennese artist and a sculptor. Then was Ullmann, Hamann, Kahn, and a number younger ones. And it, of course, took a time. But anyhow, if I would have known in the beginning that I had to be interned 6 months or even a year, I would have taken this with humor. But not knowing what was the result or what the end, that was devastating. Anyhow, we even wrote several times letters to the Home Office that we were willing and prepared to help in the war effort, for example, night watching, things like fire watching, you call it. So, of course, and we even expressed our anti-feelings against Hitler. So, but there were, it was interesting, a few people who did not dare to sign it. They were anti-Hitler, you know. Although they were Jewish, I remember one, you know. And that was quite interesting. And yet, this particular man was released before everybody else. It was, you see, it was not really a system. It was a little bit coincidental. So, never mind.
I've heard there were some people who were released for quite strange reasons.
Yes. That was one case in my house, at least. There was a lady who was interested in this particular man. So she urged a bishop to intervene. Of course, I think the bishop may be quite innocent, you know, but anyhow, it was all, the reason was humanitarian reason, of course, to get this poor man out of camp. You know. But what was behind, anybody can make guess.
Could you tell me a bit more about your accommodation? These were just the ordinary houses of the Isle of Man landing.
The accommodation was perfectly all right. That was small rooms. We had sometimes even at the very beginning, I think, two men in one bed. But I think that was only a few days. Anyhow, we got normally a bed, we had blankets enough, so, and we had a kitchen and, of course, gas and electric light. One rather unpleasant fact was that all our windows were painted blue. That was because of air raid, so air raid protection, so that the light couldn't shine through. But it looked as if we were all underwater. We couldn't see. All the panes of the windows were painted blue. And I immediately took a razor blade and started to scrape some out. And I made a few figures from the classical mythology. So, and that was quite interesting. I combined it with an artistic work.
So you invented a new art form?
No, yeah, it was, yes. It was a scraping art. It's kind of a scraper board in the reverse.
Did this catch on round the camp?
Oh, yes. It was then, there was a Jewish, Orthodox Jewish house next to ours. They were very Orthodox. And they asked me to do something in their house with from the Jewish Bible, that I made some lion and so on. And I, of course, I did that. They were very grateful to do that. So it was a kind of a decoration.
Were you able to prepare the food in your house adequately for the Jewish dietary laws of your colleagues in the house?
In my house, we had, they were mostly Jews. No, they were not in my house. People, of course, I couldn't cook kosher. That is impossible, because if you go really cook kosher, you should separate milk and meat, and so that was impossible. But none of them were fuzzy about it. They were satisfied and delighted if they got something to eat. No, the Orthodox Jews were in one house, and they had their own cook who was a very delightful man. He was a baker, and he did it. And he even baked for us rolls when we asked him. So, and that comes, come to another point of view in the internment camp. That was how a community of about 2,000 men start to reorganize or organize their lives. That was quite admirable. I must say I had the greatest admiration. And within the accommodation, I told you, was decent and clean and appropriate. Food could have been all right if you worked for it. But, of course, the other spiritual nourishment, that had to be created by ourselves. The camp commander was very helpful. There were a few not very exciting pianos in some of the houses. And soon, some of our inmates started to give concerts. There was Dr. Sluchevsky, and then there was a Professor Glass, who was a pianist. There were Rabich and Landauer, they were interned with us, and they gave concert. And then Sluchevsky got even, I think, his violin from outside. So we had almost every week or every few days a concert, which was quite outstanding. Really good classical music. And it was, of course, mostly a small, beginning a small audience. Then when there was a concert, then they wanted to have a program, so we had to print a program. We printed in the washing machine, with online cuts and on. So all sorts. Then there were lectures very, very soon. There were a number of outstanding scientists or scholars, Professor Jakobsthal, Dr. Friedenthal, Professor Cohn, Jakobsen, I mentioned already, and they were all had their special field. Some were the Greek scholar, the other were Indo-Chinese, and they gave lectures, and they were, or even poetry readings. That was almost every day and every moment there was something to be done. There were, of course, others which were dealing with emigration to America or to Australia and so on. That was something which bored me stiff, because it was mostly useless. You put your name on the list and you never knew whether it was good or not, or whether you should apply to go away. It may have been even worse. So I just left that. But the artistic and cultural activities were outstanding, very, very good. And then, of course, we had an artist's cafe where we met every evening, and we had coffee, made coffee, and had little chansons and other entertainment. That was really quite so. Actually, it was, although one was interned, but there was hardly enough time to get through. You had always to rush. Then there were occasionally even excursions or promenades, which I refused to participate outside. And one day, one of the sergeant came to me and said, "Why don't you want to come to this?" I said, I don't like to go with escorts on the bayonets. And so that was just my special dislike. I didn't like that. See, once I think we had to do it. But one day I was asked, because the brother of my student of mine, a pupil of mine from Leipzig, Den Megor, he was director at the Manx Museum in Douglas. And he heard of my internment there, and he asked the commander whether I couldn't visit his museum. So, of course, they had to send the guard with bayonet, and he had to lead me to about 3/4 of an hour away or something, and back. But I only did it once. No, it wasn't too much a pleasure.
Did you ever have any visits from friends or relations?
Well, no. That was, I think it was, no, that was quite, I don't think ever happened. I am not quite certain. I can't say it categorically, but I don't think it ever happened. We got posts. Posts we could get, but we were only allowed to write, I don't know exactly, perhaps 2 letters on special paper, only 2 letters a day or 2 letters a week or something like that. I can't remember anymore.
How well prepared do you think the camp commandant and the officers were for your arrival?
That I don't know. I think that the camp in Douglas, that was perfectly all right. I mean, I don't know whether they were a little bit worried at the beginning, possibly, but anyhow, that was quite, that the management in this camp was perfectly all right. We heard, of course, occasionally came people from other camps, from race courses, they were sent to us. Because ours was really a suburban square with houses, and everybody was housed in a normal room. Of course, we had to accommodate about more than perhaps usual in one room, 5 or 3 people, depends on the size of the house, of the room, but anyhow, it was tolerable, you could exist. Of course, there was a roll call every morning and every evening. So, and later they introduced even washing or bathroom. Actually they did almost everything which was possible to make it tolerable. It was not a torture, definitely not.
Just a mental torture, though, in that you were stuck there.
That perhaps I was more sensitive in that respect than as a first of all my personal condition. That was not very pleasant either, because almost everything which I had or sacrificed was now almost in vain. So that was perhaps a little bit aggravating, and perhaps I take imprisonment more seriously than some others.
So did you suffer a lot then from depression?
Oh, no. Oh, no. My depressions are immediately, I express them straight away. I start to curse or shout or do something. No, I have no, with me it's over then. Fortunately, my character is not like that. I didn't suffer, or that I had now agonizing aftermath. I had to take a psychiatrist. Definitely not. No, no. As soon as I was out, it was in order. You know. I was all right.
How was your health while you were in town?
Well, I was perfectly well. I had no problem, no. No, I was actually in the prime of my... No, not even toothache. No. But there were, of course, I may add that we had one man in our house who was definitely schizophrenic, or he had hallucinations. And that was ghastly. It was unbelievable. Although we had an psychiatrist in our house, a doctor, can't remember his name, but anyhow, he was East Prussian, and he treated him and so on. But this man had the hallucination that he was going to be murdered. It happened, as far as I remember, there were two. He was in his room and he was not very well. And two men were outside this window and repaired something. And they must have said something, oh, he looks rather poor or something. And he must have thought it's threatening or something. Anyhow, he told everybody, they are going to murder me tonight. And so I remember another inmate in our house said, oh, don't be ridiculous. How can you be murdered? We are so protected. We can't get out. Nobody can get in. So, but he just, yes, he said, as long as you are here, nothing will happen. But as soon as you have gone, they will come and murder me. So in the end, he had to be taken away to an asylum.
What was the language of the camp?
Oh, yes, that was quite interesting. They tried in my house, it was German, of course, normally, but if we dealt with a commander, of course, English, but of course, everybody could speak some English quite well. But they wanted to introduce in my house English, and I said, no. That is worse dangerous, because your English is lousy on the whole. So if you speak English here, you will never learn proper English. If you speak German, all right, but don't mix it up with something else. It will be a Cockney, not even a Cockney, it will be a pidgin English, and it will do you more harm than. If you want to learn English, go, there were lessons. We had some excellent young teachers who gave English lessons. That was good. But don't muddle, because you can imagine what it will be. It is a refugee English, which is horrifying.
How was your English?
My English wasn't too bad. I mean, quite. I mean, it wasn't perfect, of course, but I had all, in my school days, I had English at least four, five, 6 years. And I had a number of English friends in the last year, a number of English friends continuously for dinner parties and so on. So I was quite accustomed to speak English. I could express myself. That was no problem. But I wouldn't call it even good enough to be used as a daily language among refugees. That's wrong. One shouldn't do that.
Though there must have been some people there who'd been living in England for quite some time and perhaps couldn't speak German very well.
Oh, no, that I don't think happens. No, you can't. So if somebody pretends he forgot his mother tongue, I don't believe him. I don't believe him. That is a kind of affectation. I don't believe it. You occasionally, it may happen, that happens to me occasionally, let's say, that I don't know the equivalent or a new... what is it called in German, a Starfighter or something, because it's a new invention, and I don't know the proper German name now, but to forget to express yourself, no. Even now, I'm married to an English wife now, there's every day that I use occasionally some German, and my wife is interested in German language. We translated a German book into English for the first time. We both together, of course, Simplicissimus. And that has been quite well reviewed. So I don't believe that that you read, as unless you have left the country with about 5 years. That is possible. But if you are growing up, I don't think so. No.
To what extent were you able to have money and private transactions in the camp?
That is quite interesting. Money didn't matter much, because actually you didn't need any money. As I was a cook, I even got paid. I think I got 6 pence a day. And then I couldn't spend anything. I think they insisted that I first said, oh, ridiculous, I do that for nothing. But I said, no, it is a camp rule. If you are, I think it was 6 pence a day, which is today sounds nothing, but in the camp it accumulated. So, unless you have hardly any chance to spend it, except in the canteen for cigarettes or little items. But then in the canteen I realized that I could pay by check. So, although I didn't have my checkbook on me, but there was a man who ran the canteen. He was a businessman. I think it was Goodman, whom I later came in touch with as a publisher. And he ran it because it was some activity for him. And I said, look, what can I do? I said, oh, have you got a bank account? I said, yes. Oh, then we'll just try it on a piece of paper and it will be accepted. So I did, and I was amazed that it worked. So I could buy anything what I liked. There were certain items which could be useful for the kitchen or cigarettes or similar items.
And did you buy supplies for your artwork?
No, I don't think. I had most of the stuff. I had my engraver tools with me. I had some boxwood blocks with me. And I didn't have printing ink, but I managed to make one with margarine and graphite. So I rubbed a pencil and so on. That was good enough anyhow to make a few proofs.
For printing?
For printing, yes. But other people had printing ink and so on. We could get it. But, of course, artist material, no. I think we could. There was Schwitters was in town, too. And he painted on cardboard, so I think you got some boxes and so on, so that was went on quite easily. It's possible, yes.
There seem to have been an amazing number of artistic and musical people in Hutchinson Camp. Was that a coincidence?
It may have been a coincidence, but it may be that there are that more artistic people were opposed to Hitler. You see, that is possible. Really. The average non-thinker they could cope with, but the more sensitive people, that is a possibility. Perhaps it could be. I haven't thought of that, but it could be.
Yes.
The first time.
Well, I think that's a definite possibility, but then just the fact that someone was Jewish would be enough to get him in trouble in Hitler's Germany, and so you must have had people of all sorts of different backgrounds who had to leave just because they were Jewish.
Oh, yes.
And yet you had such a relatively large number of artists all together in Hutchinson.
Yes. But among the Jewish population, there were all sorts of very primitive people from Czechoslovakia or Austria, very simple men who just didn't do much more than men's socks or were quite simple or little business people. There were no